Hello and welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. I'm Dr. Squee and this is my show. This week, we continue to bring you our interviews and our coverage from SqueeFest, our 24-hour podcast event which raised money for NHS Charities Together. You can still donate at justgiving.com/SqueeFest. Yes, you're going to be hearing that at the beginning of every episode for the time being. But this week, we bring you something a little bit different. We have got loads of interviews which we conducted during the 24 hours, but amongst them, we also did a few shows which I thought were worthy of coming on here. So what I usually like to do is through the interviews I have with my guests, I get to know them a bit. I get to reveal something about the guests, and I think this is no exception. This week, we're going to be bringing you Level Up Leroy, a returning guest, and he's talking about the history of comics. So this is something he does online on YouTube, which he'll give details in the interview. And I think this kind of reveals a lot about him. So obviously he's the Comic-Con DJ. That's what he's known for. But, you know, part of that starts with the comics. And I think his relationship to comics influenced him as a person, as sci-fi did me. And, you know, comics is part of that, but also kind of TV shows and everything. And it's interesting to hear this, you know, not only is he hella knowledgeable about the subject, but also you can tell, you know, where a bit of his personality comes from this. So this is a real pleasure on a lot of fronts. And if you're into comics, I think this is going to be really interesting. If you're not, I think it's an interesting look back on the history of it and how what is sometimes dismissed as a light-hearted, frothy kind of medium, he reveals is actually very weighty and comes in part from parable from the Bible and allegories to that. So I think this is a really great and, as I say, worthy kind of induction into the Dr. Squee Show, even though it's not our traditional kind of interview style. So I'm not going to harp on too much. Please do donate, please do enjoy this, and please keep safe, keep looking after each other, keep washing your hands and keep your distance wherever necessary. We'll get through this, we'll be back. You know, the other reason why it's a joy to share this interview this week is because Leroy, like a lot of our artist friends, are suffering right now because they can't go out and perform like they usually would. So please also, please, one thing you can do me as a favour to me, a favour to Leroy, go to Leroy's Twitch page if you're on there. If you're an Amazon customer, create a Twitch page just to go on there and link your account from Amazon to Twitch. That's free to do. And you can follow Leroy for free. You can subscribe to his YouTube channel. Oh, sorry, not YouTube, his Twitch channel for free. And it gives him a little bit of money, but it doesn't cost you a penny. So please do that. It's a way you can support an artist during this really tough time. I'm actually quite dismayed that our government here in the UK, without meaning to get political, but you know, they're saying that the artists of any stripe, whether it be DJs, paint artists, if you will, whether it be sculptors, whether it be actors, they're saying they should retrain. So as opposed to propping up and helping an industry which has given us so much, they're putting out adverts which says, oh, you know, this artist's next, you know, their next job is going to be in cyber and they just don't know it yet. Well, you know, how about we actually put some investment and some time and some joy into, and some money, most importantly right now, into the arts. When Winston Churchill was asked to cut funding to the arts during the war, he said, well, you know, what are we saving it for? You know, what are we saving this society for, if not for the arts? That's not an exact quote, obviously, but, you know, the point still stands. Why are we throwing art under the bus right now? So really, most important time to support comics, to support artists, to support those arts that we love so much and give us so much, and we want them there for the future to keep on giving to us. And you can do that by helping out artists. So wherever you can, spend your money on the arts. Especially artists who can't work right now, please do it. Buy their DVDs, buy their comics, follow them on Twitch for free, which you can do if you've got an Amazon account. Anyway, without further ado, here's Level Up Leroy and the history of comics.
Welcome to the show with your friend and mine. So tell me, Dr. Squee, who's it gonna be this time? We like to hear you talk, and we love to hear you listen. And if you are not subscribed, you won't know what you're missing. So welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Headphones up.
Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Tonight, Squee welcomes...
Level Up Roy!
And now here's the man himself, Dr. Squee!
We are now over to the history of comics with my boy Level Up Leroy. Let's play his music.
Sword of Omen, come to my hand. Help me find the greatest DJ. Level. Level. Level Up Leroy!
Yeah, we level up.
Hey!
How are you doing, my friend?
Very well, thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, man, I've got to say, just again, I think I've reached the stage where all you can do once you've prepped everything for a 24-hour broadcast when it goes wrong is kind of enjoy it.
Yeah, just laugh and just... Like the same way whenever I'm streaming and I'm on Twitch and everyone's like, oh, this is great. No one sees what's going wrong in the background. It's just that swan and the legs are going like that. And you're unplugging stuff and trying to make stuff work. It's same with my DJ sets. Always going wrong, but everyone seems to have a great time. And as long as no one notices, we're all good.
Exactly. I'm sure no one noticed during that. I ended up interviewing contestants waiting to play. But anyway, there we go. We're not talking about that. We are talking about the history of comics. Now, I want to get straight into it. Let's talk about, first of all, for anyone who isn't aware, like, who's Level Up Leroy? What's your act? What, like, you know, tell us about you a little bit, sir.
Thank you. Yeah. So I am the self-proclaimed Comic Con DJ. what that means is over the years, I've been a comic book collector. I love this stuff like you wouldn't believe. And then I've also been a DJ, and over the years these have been my two loves. A few years ago I got quite unwell, had a thing called Bell's palsy, had a bit of an enlightening moment where I was like, okay, what can I do here? The DJing wasn't kind of lighting my fire like it used to, and I was like, I had this idea for putting the two things together, comic books, media, the movies, TV stuff, all of that stuff, but with the music, and trying to mash it up, and made this like crazy video show. And I think for the longest time I'd sort of had this idea, and you'd run it past a few people, they'd go, yeah, is there enough people out there that would dig this, you know? And I was like, well, maybe not. But once I had that kind of that realization with the Bell's palsy, and you know, we're doing this great stuff here in the NHS, and I had use them guys and see doctors and stuff, I kind of had that realization, you know, you just got to go for your dream. And I think we talked about it before with the Kevin Smith stuff, and if you're a comic book guy, you're gonna know all about Kevin Smith. And it's just saying, go for your dreams, do what you want to do, as long as you're not hurting anyone, you know. And I kind of went for it, and it seems to be paying off at the moment. It's got me to conventions all over the world, all over the UK. I've met some fantastic friends like yourself. You know, we're ants as well. And you get to just meet all these awesome people, and that I would never have met unless I'd just taken that jump and started playing. Yeah, well, basically, yeah, that's how I got there. But I am a Comic Con DJ, plays like weird videos and stuff, that games and Guardians of the Galaxy and Rick and Morty and all that good stuff. And we play it and we mix it up and we have a party and we just have a ruddy good time.
And we won't probably have enough time to go into it and do it justice. But please, if anyone's watching this, go to Leroy's Twitch page and his Facebook page. Follow them. He does sets online as well, as much as he can. And it's wonderful. It's been such a salve in these hard times for everyone during lockdown and everything. So thank you for doing that for a start. Do you have a favorite convention? And maybe another second part to this question is, given like, you know, the move towards more media in Comic Cons. Do you have a favorite one which concentrates more on the comics side of things?
Yeah, great question. I mean, they're all my favorite, right? It's like my children. and we met at the Sci-Fi Weekend, and the reason that one's fantastic is because it's got this like weird kind of awesome community thing that goes on there. And then I've been to other conventions, and they all have their quirks and their different kind of movements. But the Comic Con that I'd always wanted to go to was New York Comic Con. If I could pick anyone, I know everyone always says about San Diego, it's the biggest, it's the original. But for me, it was always like, I want to go to New York Comic Con because it's the birthplace of comic books. You know, Marvel Comics were there, and DC Comics used to be based there. And it's where the modern day superhero comic was born. And so... Yeah. Being able to go there for the last 2 years on the trot as a guest playing music was fantastic. But it was even better going around the convention and actually going to see the artists and the writers and being able to just meet them and say hello and all that stuff. It was like a real fanboy moment for me. And I think the first one I filmed, I sort of did a Facebook Live, and I'm walking around and I'm walking around, here we are, New York. And actually there's a moment I can see it where I actually start getting a bit overwhelmed, and it all starts getting a bit too much for me, and I'm like, I'm gonna have to stop now and just kind of catch my breath and stuff, because it was just, yeah. So New York holds a very dear place in my heart for that reason.
That's wonderful. So getting on to the comics of it all though, do you have a favorite kind of comic story yourself? Like, let's just get to know you a bit before we talk about a bit more of the history of it.
Yeah. So I'm a superhero guy. I make no qualms about that. I do enjoy the odd highbrow comic, but I just like my straight up American heroes. I've been a Batman guy for the longest time. Happy Batman Day, everyone, by the way. It's Batman Day today. Yeah, perfect timing. And it's always been about superheroes, and for the longest time, literally Batman. And I think I mentioned it this morning. There's a couple of comics that really do it for me. There's Dark Knight Rises and Death in the Family, which is just phenomenal. And The Killing Joke.
Those last two, especially, very good for the kids.
yeah, very good for the kids. Yeah, they've not read them ones yet. I've not introduced them to those. So, but yeah, like those. They're three pivotal moments in Batman's life, in storytelling, that comic book artists, writers always come back to, and they seem to be re-referencing them all the time. And I've noticed just recently, like Death in the Family, with the return of Red Hood in the games, such as like Arkham Knight. DC Comics are about to re-release Death in the Family as a DVD that you can pick the adventure, which is kind of what they did with the comic back in the day. And so, yeah, they just keep revisiting these stories. So there's some real anchor points for Batman.
Yeah, it's very funny how that happens. That I know some of the kind of, for me, there is a lot of going back to those touchstones, which is okay to do it for a degree, but sometimes it feels like treading old ground. I really love it when they invent something new, when they bring something new to the world. Like the Court of Owls is something which really caught on in the in people's minds.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be one of those stories, the Court of Owls, that's kind of still quite fresh. It's still kind of going on a little bit. There's still this run going on with Dick Grayson being a sort of assigned to them, but. Didn't we just see with the DC fandom when they announced the Gotham Knights game, and then right at the end, we get like this clip of the Court of Owls, and they're now going to be dropping them into PlayStation and Xbox games. And it's just like, yes, come on. and I've got my own theory on that as well. So, I've got my own theory on how that game's going to play out. Yeah. But yeah, Court of Owls was fantastic.
And are there any other kind of comics that you read that you want to kind of talk about a bit?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly the stuff that's coming out from Image at the moment is fantastic. And, you've only got to look at The Walking Dead, stuff like that. There's a book called Chew, which is amazing. Outcasts. They're all kind of slightly on the horror side, but slightly sort of more in Breckfin, sometimes slight realism. So I've been reading some of that stuff as well, which is really good. But for the best part, I've always been a superhero guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I live with it. Like, you know, you can get so many other things other places. And yeah, of course, superheroes have gone onto TV and movies more now in the popular zeitgeist. But that seems to be where comics had their own space. Like, you know, superheroes was something which comes from comics, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. From kind of the golden age when that all started with Superman, it was like the boom. And they have stood the test of time. Whereas horror comics can come and go, and stories can kind of end and wrap up. You know, these Batman and Superman they were there before I was on this planet, and they're going to be there after I leave. You know, they're just timeless characters now.
Definitely. It's something I wanted to get us onto, kind of like weave us into the history of comics of it all. You've started a YouTube channel where you've started talking about particular comics and particular issues about comics and ideas. Tell us a bit about that, first of all.
Oh, yeah, thanks. That channel has come off the back of seeing the stuff that you're doing, buddy. Felt very inspired by that, so thank you. The plan for me this year, and COVID, was to go around the comic conventions. And I thought, well, you know what? I've got a real insight here to give people that kind of behind the scenes track on what's going on, walking around the Comic-Con floor, especially certainly New York. And we were supposed to go to Anaheim for the Star Wars celebration, and really like put them together, film them, walk people around the convention floor, really talk to some of the vendors, talk to some of the guests, and really give people that Comic-Con feel when they couldn't get there. However, that didn't happen this year, and all the Comic-Cons have disappeared. And I kind of sat back and thought, well, I was going to do something online. What can I do? I think it just became natural that I would talk about comics, the comic book industry, and that can be a very broad, just a broad spectrum of things. It can go from talking about the movies, the DVDs, to the books, the comics. One of the ones I did recently was the book on Seduction of the Innocent. There you go.
Yes.
By Frederick Wortham, which, you know, is a book that nearly destroyed the comic book industry. So
yeah.
I've just put 4 videos up so far. I'm trying to do them weekly. It might go bi-weekly by the time I'm trying to keep up with everything else. But yeah, it's going really well, and getting a lot of good positive feedback from that, which has been great.
Now, the video is wonderful, but for anyone watching who hasn't watched your video yet, please tell us about that book and how it nearly brought down the comics industry. This is a fascinating story.
Yeah, so comic books at the time, they were kind of, well, the new superhero comics were born out of war and famine and the dark ages in New York. Basically, everyone was poor, had no money, and you know, you've got the Great Depression going on, and comic books come in. They're bright, they're colorful, they're giving you these superheroes. It's positivity, and so lots of people started reading them. However, at the same time, they had like a serious problem with like kids misbehaving, the juvenile delinquents, as they were called. And this guy, Frederick Wortham, who in my video I say as well, he's actually not a bad guy. He's like the biggest evil villain to comic books that ever was. But I mean, he stood up for racial equality. He was literally trying to help children. He was a psychologist. His heart is definitely in the right place. But what happened was all of the kids and the juvenile delinquents he was seeing were all saying, well, yeah, I read comics, you know. And poor Frederick is like focused on this. So he's come up with this book. It's Seduction of the Innocent, where he claims that, you know, comics are just the root of all evil. They were causing, some of the horror stories in one of the articles that he wrote, where you know, children have killed people and stuff like that. He's saying that the horror comics were the cause of that. He does have some points in there. You know, he's sort of talking about there's a bit of leg and a bit of sort of side cleavage and boob and all this stuff, and women are being sort of shown in a very derogatory manner, which has certainly happened over the years, and certainly in comic books. You know, you see these women with huge bosoms and stuff like that, and only recently are we seeing this kind of normalization of women and bringing them, you know, not overly sexualized.
Yeah, let's talk about the bad side. No, I'm joking. Obviously, we want to talk about women. It's a joke.
So no, you're fine. So you know, there is some stuff like that, but then he goes on to say that, you know, Superman is kind of a Nazi ideology, and Batman and Robin are living a homosexual lifestyle, which back then would have been considered extremely wrong. So what if they were?
Exactly. It doesn't matter,
but you know, they weren't. and he even goes as far to claim as that the comic books, because kids are sitting in reading these comics, the paper particles were causing asthma. Nothing to do with the environment they're living in, and New York is full of like dirt and smog and stuff. It's the paper particles from the comics that are causing asthma. So it's kind of strange that book was brought out then, and now we look at movies, and you know, Tarantino was being pulled apart for his movies. It's leading people astray, and computer games now are leading people astray. So, you know, in some sense, he's kind of like ahead of his time.
Yeah.
But
some of which I find interesting with that, if you don't mind me jumping in, just because it seems to be there is this great fear of the juvenile delinquents about the same time when teenager becomes a term, about the same time when younger people have more of a voice, which obviously, if you're going to give people a voice, some positives as well as negatives will come through from that voice. It seems to be a lot of it comes out of that fear of teenagers and a young person's lifestyle being represented.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And you can imagine he's just dealing with all these young, you know, teenagers, juveniles, and they're all reading comics. That was comics that were kind of our movies and our equivalent of video games. You know, they didn't have that much entertainment other than sort of going out to the cinema. So this was something people could do at home and read, and comic books were sent out to the guys and the soldiers during the war. So they were very much escapism. And, you know, when you've got 90 something odd percent of the country reading comic books, and 90% of them are all going, the bad ones are going to someone, well, I read comics, and you're seeing this one link, but you're not asking the good kids. So 90% of the good kids would have gone, yeah, I read comics. Yeah. And they give me a moral compass. I mean, my mum and dad did a fantastic job bringing me up, but Batman and Superman definitely set my moral compass. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to be the good guy.
Yeah, it's the same thing for me. I must admit, when I was younger, I wasn't that aware of comics, and I got into them a bit later. But for me, it was TV shows of the same kind of ilk. It was Star Trek and Doctor Who, these kind of who have these wonderful progressive messages about including everyone and kind of inclusion in different diversity in infinite combinations, I believe is one used by Star Trek sometimes. But for me, it's interesting how, like, we're talking here about, as I say, it feels like it's the rise of teenagers being linked to delinquents.
Yeah.
And it seems to be the same in every step. When comic books represent someone new, when they suddenly bring in, let's represent Muslims as real people, not just as these kind of like enemies in stories. Yeah. Let's represent LGBTQ rights in there. And as soon as anything gets added to the mix, suddenly people are seeing that as the next great danger. Have you seen that as well through kind of your study of comics?
Yeah, to a point. Yeah, absolutely. It's very strange. So even, what was it, probably about 6 or 7 years ago now, I think, there was the first X-Men gay wedding an issue. And I'm not an X-Men reader, so I've got the issue, but I don't read the comics. But there was uproar in that, and some people were just like, well, no, I'm not sure that this is. And so you've got people that being sort of brought out and being put into the comics and being brought into that media, which they should rightly be. And then you've still got some people still like, no, which is awful.
Because, I mean, it does seem to move the dial when social media and when we see representation of people, like both in comics and in other medias, as soon as people represented and people can read about it as if it's just an everyday thing, acceptance in the main culture seems to follow. Sometimes it takes a while, but like on the whole, that seems to drive forward a lot of things.
Yeah. I think the more they do that, the better. It's strange when you look at the X-Men, for example. Stan Lee created the X-Men, and I mean that's just a whole issue of racism, basically put into a comic book without saying this is a comic about racism.
Yeah.
Literally was people were, well, they've got these mutant genes, they can't be normal humans, we're going to hunt them down, and ultimately, yeah, that's the message, and they had to kind of hide some of those messages moving forward. And as we're progressing, and I still can't believe we do have people who oppose things like that in this day and age, but you know, they are coming forward, and comics have caught up, very much so. And I think it's funny to mention that, because coming off the back of that book, The Seduction of the Innocent, was the Comics Code Authority, which they then put printed on every single comic. And no comic, it was agreed that no comic could go to print without that Comics Code on it. But what that Comics Code did was dampen comics beyond belief. So Batman and Robin couldn't live in the Wayne Manor alone. They had to have Aunt Harriet move in, and they had to have a woman there. You couldn't show a gun. No way could you show any kind of violence, and certainly no way could you show two men or women getting married. Like, that would have just been a complete no-no. So it is like the worst kind of self censorship, you know, these creators had to go through. And even Stan Lee was approached by the United States. It was something to do with the president, and he was approached by the government to do a comic book story about Spider-Man, who at the time was at university and he's on campus. And Stanley has to do this comic about drugs. So he's like, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And so one of Spidey's friends takes these drugs, and he's up on the roof, and he's sort of tripping balls, and Spidey swings in and saves him. So Stan's done this story. He's been asked by the United States government to do this story, and the Comics Code Authority says no, because you're showing drugs. And Stan's like, well, I've been asked by the government to do this, number one, and two, I'm going, look, drugs are bad, right? And this is what could happen, and you know, potentially Spider-Man wouldn't be there to save you. So this is the message that we're trying to bring. And still yet, the Comic Code Authority was like, no, you absolutely no way can this comic go to print with the code on it. And those comics were the first comics to then get printed without the Comics Code Authority on it, because Stan was like, no, I've been asked to do this, and it's the right thing to do. So yeah, it's like,
then it seems like a huge thing to do that, like, you know, to not print the Comic Code Authority on your book was a huge thing at the time.
Yeah, so parents would, that would be the, I guess, the equivalent of buying a DVD that's of age 18, you know, you would look at it and you wouldn't give it to a 12-year-old, because you go, well, it says here it's for 18-year-olds. So if it didn't have the Comics Code Authority printed on it, a parent would technically look at that and go, this is not appropriate for anyone.
Yeah.
And all it was Spider-Man saving his buddy who's made a mistake taking drugs. And Stan was asked to do that story.
And do you think, was there any kind of interesting issues which came out of them? Because I don't know if the timing matches up, but I'm probably making this up in my head. But I'm wondering if this is how we get to 66 Batman, which I love. So it might be that some good came out of it. Because like, it's at a time when you can only do so much, and you can't do certain things for fear of censorship and the Comic Code Authority not liking it. And I wonder if that time brought out these kind of like more fun comics, at least, even if it kind of stopped more heavyweight issues.
100%. So that storyline came after Batman 66. However, so Seduction of the Innocent kicks in. Comic books have now got this code on them. And what basically happened is you took Batman from being a dark crusader of vengeance and made him Gotham's number one leading citizen who would walk through Gotham in the middle of the day wearing various colored costumes and hello citizens, how are we? We're all very well. And he would fight aliens with ray guns and stuff like that because they weren't allowed to have a gun. Superman couldn't be sort of shown as having big fisticuff fights anymore. So he become this kind of wimpy boy scout, as it were, and Lois Lane suddenly became this kind of secondary lame character of like, oh, I love Superman so dearly, and here's Clark Kent, ugh, and oh, I hope one day to marry him and be his little wife at home. And it was the stories just became so dull and so bland, and yeah, comic book sales went, they just dropped by about 75% because they were just boring. And so they were boring, and Batman was, there was talks about Batman being cancelled. So we're here today on Batman Day, and in the 50s, they were like, you know what? Batman doesn't sell very much anymore. We might need to cancel this comic. Yeah. And it wasn't until they did the Batman 66. So that came in just after them. And I think it was ABC Studios. I can't remember. Someone correct me in the chat. Needed to come up with this idea. They wanted a show, and Batman seemed kind of fun and campy enough at the time. And they took that silliness of that era that was going on, and they put it on the big screen. I love it. It holds a dear place in my heart. I used to watch it with my granddad, and it really holds a dear place in my heart. However, what we see is actually in that they've taken that era of that silliness and campiness and no real violence, and Batman's not the vengeance that he is, and it lasted two seasons and limped into its third. So it kind of came out, everyone went, oh, Batman, great. And then it sort of, you know, after a few fun episodes, it didn't have the longevity that the Batman, the original Batman, the Crusader, and the Batman that we've got now has. So it's quite interesting to compare the two comics of the era to that show. Although I still love it.
I mean, one thing which it does make me think of is, because I do love, even though like these restrictions, as you say, can kill an industry, but it's interesting what can come out of them. So like you mentioned Superman there, something which I'm hearing a lot of the elements which you brought up, even though they might have been very restricting, might have made it a kind of wimpy character at the time. I think you don't get to Dick Donner's wonderful Superman without those elements being put in, because I actually really love how different Superman and Batman are. I want Batman to be vengeance, to be the knight, to be kind of like punching faces and taking names, but I don't want Superman to be that. I want Superman's Achilles heel to be that he has to save everyone, and that's quite a neurotic state. And I love the dual identity, the whole thing of Lois Lane being in love with Superman but not Clark Kent, even though they're so guy. So there's lots of wonderful stuff, it sounds like, came out that era once you release the handcuffs a bit.
I fully agree with that. I think probably with Superman, it was kind of more of a case of you couldn't just have him going in and you couldn't have the big fights that we see. If you pick up a Superman comic these days, or if you go back and look at the Death of Superman per se, it literally is just a slugfest and just plowing in and using his powers and just blowing stuff up and just going full on. And you weren't allowed to have Superman do that, just to go beat up another bad guy as such. So he was kind of limited at that point to like saving a cat out of a tree, you know, flying up and getting the cat, or going on weird adventures under the sea with a mermaid girlfriend that he had and stuff. Yeah.
I'd like to see the long take from that, though. We've got something from the floor, which hopefully you can shed some light on this, because I don't get this reference. But Elliot's asked, Housewife Lois was still better than Supergirl from that era, dating a horse.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%, man. I can't remember how that story goes, but yes, it did. They sort of did imply that she was kind of romantic to a point with to a fashion. I think it was an ex sort of boyfriend who got morphed into a horse, or it was something weird like that. But I mean, yeah, there was crazy times. I mean, you had Streaky the Super Cat, Crypto, which has kind of made a comeback now, the Super Dog. And yeah, there was, like, I mean, even Batman had a bat family. There was a bat hound and a bat monkey, and Bat Mite was introduced. And yeah, they started introducing some very whimsical and crazy characters. Yeah. But yes, there is something about Supergirl doing that, and I'm going to go into that, and that is going to be an episode on the podcast that I do.
there is something you brought up there, Batmite. Now, you see, this is another example where I think it shows that even the most crazy of characters in the right hands can be redeemed, because it was Grant Morrison, I believe, which did a run where he made Batmite a creature from another dimension. He sort of said that he was a huge fan of Batman. And, like, I'm trying to remember the details of this story. I've read it a very long time ago, but Batman's like, he's locked up somewhere, or is he like isolated? And Batmite appears to him, and
it's the Batman of Enura. It's kind of, it's reversed Batman. It's a psychological thing, where he kind of shuts his mind down and goes on this kind of autopilot thing. And then Grant Morrison does what Grant Morrison does, writes the most trippiest comics you'll ever read. And then off he goes. And he absolutely, you know, Batmite, born out of that weird, wacky time. And I've got a tattoo of him on my arm. He's on there. Batman's on there. I've even got the Comics Code Authority on there. So,
In a second, I want to get on to something different. We've just had a message which just reminded me to shout out about the charity. So Heather Lee 7, thank you very much. She said, I've never heard of the Doug Spree Show before. Well, welcome, to be honest, but kudos for you and everyone involved for raising money for NHS charities together. So it just reminded me, I should give a shout out. Please do donate. Like, we want you all to have a good time. If you're struggling because you've lost your job or for whatever other reason, we want you to have a great day. But if you can afford to, please go to justgiving.com/squeefest, SQUEEFEST. It's on the bottom of the screen right now. And you can help NHS Charities Together, which is helping the COVID response and the staff and volunteers working for the NHS. So please do help out if you can. So I just wanted to remember to do that. But spin us in a slightly different direction. Thank you, sir. To spin us in a slightly different direction, something which I did want to talk about was, because you did do a course in all this, you know, just to give everyone your bona fides here. But
online internet course.
It counts. Like, we're online here. We like online. But sir, let's go back to, like, what is the earliest kind of form of comics? Because it goes back quite a bit before the kind of comics we know.
Yeah, so we always talk about, when we're talking about superhero comics and we're looking at comics and comic book history, we talk about the Golden Age, and that's Action Comics number one. It's Superman. Here we go. But there were comics available before that. You have from the 1500s to 1828 is the Pioneer Age. And as you can imagine, they're not comics as we would sort of perceive them, but you can certainly see that it's the beginnings of comics. They've got images that are in panels and they're following on from each other. So there's kind of this story that's not the per se comics that we read today, but yeah, so that's the Pioneer Age. You then got the Victorian Age. So the Victorians actually sort of kind of started putting comics together and telling stories in that fashion. Then it goes into the Platinum Age, which is 1883 to 1938, which then leads us into the Golden Age. So, yeah, it's not just as simple as that. Superman came and off we go. And that Platinum Age was really sort of set the standard for comics. It was a lot of crime, horror, mystery comics and that kind of thing, you know, and a few like war comics as well and stories. So, yeah.
And where do the heroes come into the story?
So the Golden Age is the first appearance. It's Action Comics number one. It's 1938. It's the birth of Superman. That is considered the birth of the superhero. They hadn't seen anything like that in comics before. It was so DC Comics kind of took a punt on it at the time. It was very much like, well, we'll give it a go. We want something new. I don't know if this will really pan out for us, but let's throw some new stuff out there because we just keep telling cowboy and Indian stories, and let's try this crazy thing. And it just took the world by storm, and that's kind of how they get Batman. It was literally like they put it out there and they wouldn't know for months until people got hold of the comics and the feedback came back that is like, oh my god, this is a hit. And that's how they turn around and they're like, you, Bill Kane, go create me someone else. I need another superhero. And you get Batman, and then they're all born from that. The interesting thing about Superman is that the course that you mentioned that I was on. So Michael Uslane, who put that course together that I was on, also ran a course in America at a university. We could actually get a real degree, not the printed out one I got from the internet. But he was talking to the deans there and sort of saying, well, I want to do a course on comic books and comic book history and their rich history. And they're very much like, well, no, silly books. It's for kids. It's, you know, it's silly stuff. And so the way he got them to turn their views on this was like, well, can you tell me the story of Moses, which is Moses is, you know, the family, he's got to be put in a basket. Jewish family, they're being hunted down. He's put in the basket. He's sent in the river, goes down the river. He's picked up by the family. He grows up and becomes the hero, Moses, with the Ten Commandments. Great. Yeah. Can you tell me Superman's backstory? They go, yeah, well, he's in this family. There's this planet, isn't it? Krypton is going to explode, and they're being hunted, and it's going to explode. And they put their baby in a rocket, and the rocket goes through space, and as they're telling the story, the light switch is coming on, then goes through space, and they land with Jonathan and Martha Kent, and he grows up and becomes Superman, this hero. And so, you know, you've got these two Jewish boys who have taken their biblical history and literally just put it in a comic book form and made this kind of modern mythology. And that's kind of what comics are. I mean, if you look at The Flash is Mercury, isn't he? Let's be honest. Superman is Zeus. Batman is Hades. And I know people say Hades is god of war and death and evil, but actually, if you look at the Greek mythology, he's not evil. He's more of a plays more of a passive role, actually, and tries to maintain balance. And that's very much a Batman role in the Justice League. Very passive, maintains balance and controls the gods, so to speak. So I love it.
And I love looking back at some of those earlier comics, because you do get some kind of interesting stories, but it's like, it's how recognizable yet unrecognizable it is to the heroes we know now. So you read an old Batman, like some of the earlier ones, his Batmobile is just his car. It's just this red car, I believe
just
it is.
Just a red car, yep.
That's his Batmobile. It's a nice red car, but
yeah, can you imagine that now, if you're looking at one of the new movies and Batfleck rocks up and he's pulls around in his red Corvette, you know, it just doesn't have the same impact. So yeah, these heroes and the comic books and the stories, the superhero stories, have just evolved over time, even to the point when you go way back, even like say the Flash, the original Flash was just a guy who could run fast. And I think he got his powers from breathing in the fumes of hard water. Now that's ice. Hard water is ice. And he got his powers from breathing in the fumes of hard water, which is kind of what they you know, they're trying to describe these things back in the day and they couldn't quite get there. So, you know, that was the original Golden Age Flash. And it's not until you get to the Bronze Age Flash, it gets brought in, the Silver Age Flash, where you're actually getting him hit by a bolt of lightning, chemicals and stuff. And they're talking about science and that sort of stuff. What a transformation from like one just character to a completely new character. So they can evolve from person to person as well, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, you had Superman when he was first created, just jumping very high. He can fly at that stage.
leap buildings in a single bound.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool.
Superman can fly. So yeah, that was evolution again. I mean, if you look at the evolution of Superman, he's gone from that kind of ultra human, basically, that could just really jump high. His breath could blow people over. It certainly wasn't ice breath initially, and he was just super strong. And then they've evolved him as a character, and he's gone from that to being being dead and potentially sort of, we were led to believe, four different characters until they kind of told us what it was in The Return of Superman. And then from there, he became a blue electric character that was only able to be held by a containment suit. And then they turned out there was like, nah, you thought he was a blue character. Now he's a red electric character. There's two of them and we need to merge them together. So like just the way they can continue to evolve these characters and do crazy things with them. But what they always do and where they always come with these comic books is they look at the original character, and they always bring it back round. And there's always that emphasis on, yes, they might have a slight quirks and slight differences, but bringing them round to their origins and who they are fundamentally is what makes these characters successful. And that's where we've seen the comic book movies that we're getting today, when they are true to the comics as much as they can be, because you can't put a comic book on a telly screen. It's just impossible. But when they are truer as much as they can be to those comics and the original characters, we get better stories. And Marvel have proved that over the last 10 years. That Iron Man film, the first Iron Man film, is one of the most perfect movies on the planet. And they've done that by being absolutely true to the character. Of course, Robert Downey Jr. is charming as hell and is just the perfect Tony Stark. But they got the perfect Tony Stark. They found someone who was Tony Stark. He's a millionaire. He's an industrialist. He wears a suit of armor. You know, they just kept it simple and kept it with the comics and in line.
Yeah. I really feel like Marvel got that what the charm of the comics and what was so interesting about them was they were all such unique and different characters. And let's make this a funny film because that's a funny character. Let's make Captain America a very earnest film because he's an earnest character. Let's make Iron Man a very flawed man who's just trying his best, but he's overtaken by his vision over what he should do sometimes. And DC just went, let's make everyone Batman. You know, Superman, wouldn't it be better if he was more like Batman? And they modernized these characters. I think that was the mistake they made, which they're finally starting to realize it's okay to have different characters with different types of movies.
Yeah, they definitely, with regards to the movies, Marvel Comics, they are literally as close as I can see putting comic books and fun comic books on the big screen. DC in their movies tend to be more steeped in they try and steep them in more realism than Marvel ever do. So Marvel are just like, here's Thor, he's a Greek, he's a Nordic god, and everyone just goes okay. Whereas when you watch The Man of Steel, they're like, okay, so if a Man of Steel turned up and he was an alien, how would the planet actually react to that? And how would we, you know, we would be talking about fear and there would be these dark undertones. And I think what Marvel do really well is they go, ah, scrub that. Let's just have some fun.
So I know where you're coming from, but I kind of disagree only by the fact that I think DC gets the worst of realism, like the darkest side of realism, which is fine to have in there. But Marvel sees metaphor. It, like you were saying, like, you know, Superman's really just a metaphor for Moses. That's a lovely metaphor there. And Marvel seemed to see that, yeah, you can tell a brilliant war film through all, like, the Avengers, through kind of like a huge space battle. But what's at the heart of it isn't this huge space battle. It's these individuals going through these experiences that we all experience of kind of like having a child and losing them, having kind of like one life and then having to face another one because something happens around you. Like, you know, right now we're going through COVID, and the most clever comics, I think, will tell that through an analogy. You know, they won't just hit it on the head with what's happening right now. And it's the lie that tells the truth, if you will.
They're certainly, what Marvel are doing at the moment is making their characters more relatable. You like them straight away. And even the flawed ones. I mean, Tony Stark, let's be honest, as his character on screen, we shouldn't like him. He's a bit of a jerk, isn't he, at times? And he's this rich guy, and, you know, he's not particularly nice to Peter in their interactions, but then he gives him a suit. But we know, just because the way that they've written the films and these actors are so great, we know he's flawed, and we know that we kind of see their heart straight away. So although he's coming across as a jerk, we know in his heart that he's not that guy. And Marvel just seemed to, every movie, they seem to get to the heart of these characters really quick. We become invested in them very, very quickly. Whereas, and I love Man of Steel as a movie, and I love Zack Snyder. but I think the reason I love that is because, and you said the Richard, you love your Richard Donner version, which I love as well. But I got to see, as a comic book guy, a very realistic, gritty take on Superman, and this kind of very realistic of, oh yeah, if he was here, how would the world react? And then Batman v Superman, you've got the court case going on and stuff like that. Of how does the world react? But the Marvel comics are more focused on the characters, whereas I think those DC ones sort of were focused on the world around. They've just tried to jump into Justice League too quick. But hopefully the Snyder Cut will rectify that, which we get next year.
We'll see. I hope so. But, like, I mean, to me, it's, I will give them this. They're very good. Like, I think the Superman which they showed does come from the child they showed. So that child grew up with a father who told him, sometimes you might have to let someone die. And that's what ends up happening with Zod. In the same way in the original movies, Maron Pa Kent always taught him to be whiter than white, to be pure than pure. You have to save everyone, like, everyone's good. And that's the Superman you get. So I do actually applaud them. They have followed through on where it starts from, where it goes to. That they did well.
Yeah. And I think that's why I like it. And there's a lot of Easter eggs and nods to the comic book readers. Maybe too many. Maybe they should go down the Marvel route of a bit more flashbang and bright colors and stuff like that. So, but who knows? What do I know? I'm just a guy who does the odd YouTube video here and there, and they're still making millions and millions of dollars with their film, like The Joker, which is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, we've got 10 minutes left, so maybe we could go on to a bit of, we've spoken about the movies. How do you think the movie then influenced, because obviously these movies are from the comic books, how do the movies end up influencing then the comics in return?
I'm glad you asked that, because I think they're having a massive influence on the comics right now. And in my opinion, actually, this is where it changes. DC Comics are telling some fantastic stories at the moment in their universes. Man of Steel is like an Elseworlds vision of Superman. Yeah.
Just going to throw it up there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It kind of is. And it's like the Joker is kind of this Elseworlds Joker, isn't it? Which I'm all for. Like, give me loads of Elseworlds films, and if you can do that, I'm happy. Don't try and build a universe, just give me one story or two stories that are fantastic. I'm totally happy with that. Where were we going? We were going somewhere else, the comic books.
We're moving, so, going back into comics.
Yeah, so the comics, from what I can see myself personally, what I've read, the Marvel comics are now being heavily influenced by their own movies. So we're getting this kind of change in characters, how they've kind of maybe potentially reacted over the years in the comic books and now reacting the way they would in their movies, which is always slightly different. And I do wonder if that's going to bring them into a dangerous position where they're going to find that they're suddenly parodying themselves because if the movie is now influencing the comic as opposed to the comic influencing the movie, where, you know, are we going to be looking at completely new stories from the movies that are then going to be rehashed in the comics as opposed to the other way around? They take stuff from the comic books, they pull all the best bits or what people perceive to be the best bits and pop them into the movies and make them in their own vision. Whereas I find that DC Comics right now are staying true to their guns. They are still telling good, solid Batman stories. They are telling good, solid Flash stories. They're amazing at the minute. Superman is fantastic as well. It hit a bit of a lull and has shot back up. So DC Comics seem to have their comic book house really steady as far as storytelling goes, whereas Marvel are sort of constantly having some bad issues and bad runs, and people are sort of saying, well, that's not a great run, and they're restarting them all. They're number one again. So it's going to be a really interesting time to see where we come out of. And, you know, we were talking about the various ages of comics. And, you know, some people choose different dates. I think you've got the Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, sort of like the Copper Age. Then you've got the Extreme Age. Some people have thrown in there as well, which is kind of the 90s with Image Comics just having like the biggest, muscliest man ever with the big guns. And then you're always in the comics you're reading now, the modern age of comics. So I wonder if we are now sitting in the Marvel age of comics, or whether this will become, I wonder what age this will be when we look back at this in 10 to 15 years time. Will this be the film age and be very much leaning upon Marvel Comics have done in the movies, reflecting what they're doing in the comics, or will it be perceived as something else? I wonder if any of the viewers have got any thoughts on that.
We've got a comment about Rupert's biggest fan, which is my friend Alan Manning. He's put that, they cancelled Doctor Strange comic, yeah. Very sad. I think Heather Lee 7 might have got the wrong end of the stick of that, because she said that means no more Benedict Cumberbatch being in the movies. I don't think he's going anywhere in a hurry. I think we're going to see that.
No, I think that's just the comics. And unfortunately, that really does happen quite a lot with runs of comic books and creators. You'll get a run of comics that you really enjoy from issues 1 to 24 or something like that, and then suddenly they'll cancel it and you won't see Doctor Strange for another 6 months to a year, and then suddenly a movie will come out and then you get the comic, you know. Always happens in the comic book world.
Well, there's a just a quick one as well, because we just going into the end of the show, so like, sorry if you don't have enough time to do this justice, but
that's right,
obviously every industry is going through a hell of a time with COVID-19 and with everything that's happening at the moment. How do you think comic books comes out this time?
So really interesting, because there's people are buying graphic novels in their droves. They're buying the collected issues from Amazon, Waterstones, wherever they buy their books. Comic book sales are on the decline, and they have been for a number of years. The back market, the secondary market of the Golden Age, Silver Age of comics, people are buying those back issues up left, right and center, but comic books in a whole are sort of taking a bit of a nosedive. So there has been a big move towards digital. And a lot of people are reading them now on their iPads and Kindles and what have you. That might help save it. But yeah, I'm really not sure whether we get to a point, because I don't feel like the new movies are actually bringing on new readers of comic books. So I talk to a lot of comic book fans, and when I say, oh, brilliant, what comic books do you read? They go, well, I've seen all the movies. You're like, ah, right. Yeah. Go pick up a book. Go check out the source material. So I make this plea. If you've got a local comic shop, brick and mortar shop near you, go in there, support them. Go pick up. If you're going to pick up trades, go pick up the trades. And if you really enjoy that, go and hit up the series and get your monthly comics in.
I mean, my worry is, I think that that it used to be. It's kind of a funny thing that's happened. We were talking about the fact that the movies now, especially with the Marvel movies, are such an interlinked universe, and they've got so many films in. They get to tell bigger and bigger stories because they've got that rich background. And comics now actually are now usually rounding off after a year or two. They reset the dial and they start again with a fresh run of stories. Do you think it loses some richness to that? Because it's weird that the movies are finally picking up on that and are doing very well, and the comic books aren't doing that anymore and are doing increasingly poorly.
They're coming away from that, yeah. So they increasingly sort of come away from the heritage numbering, you know, from one to where we're at. And it seems strange that they're always very happy to bring back you might be reading, say, a Spider-Man issue 34, but they'll actually print on there, this is issue 900 and something of, you know, heritage and stuff. But they keep resetting them because they're writing them for the trade. They're writing these kind of very much one-shot stories. And the idea, I think, was to bring in new readers, because if you look at, you go in a comic shop and you see number 1,000 and what are they up to on Detective Comics now? 1,020 odd. That's a bit like, oh, well, there's a lot of backstory there. So how do I go back and read all of that? So they're trying to do that. I don't know. Yeah, I'd like to see them go back to just telling good stories, whether it be one or two issues, but keep the numbering going, keeping going for the collector, and not worrying about the trade writing so much, because I think that is probably what's sort of harming the industry. But what do I
Leroy, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a great hour looking through the history of comics. If anyone's interested, please go to Leroy's to YouTube channel. Please give the details now.
Level Up Leroy. So it's youtube.com/levelupleroy. Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, all of it. Love a follow. And well done, mate. Keep going. You're doing a fantastic job, and I'll be donating in a bit as well.
Thank you very much, Leroy. Everyone, please donate at the link at the bottom of the screens. Leroy, I will speak to you soon. Thank you very much for being involved today.
Catch you later, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sword of Omen, come to my hand. Help me find the greatest DJ. Level up the roar!